We almost sold it for $1 billion, didn't quite, because we got caught in the chop of the global financial crisis. And I guess what made that dramatic was we were 2 hours away from selling it for $1 billion when the deal fell through.
2 hours. How does that happen? Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. This week, I'm joined by Norman Crowley, the founder of Crowley Carbon. If you haven't joined my newsletter, which goes out every Monday, jump to MrGaryFox.com, click subscribe. Every Monday, you'll get a summary of all the best ideas, trends, and just cool stuff that I'm seeing throughout the week for business people, entrepreneurs, creatives, basically anyone that's interested in business or starting their own business. We nearly have 550 people on the newsletter now, so it's providing a lot of value every Monday for free. So go to MrGaryFox.com, sign up, and I'll see you there next Monday. Today's guest, Norman Crowley. They have the best tagline of any company I've ever heard: cooling the planet. When you can boil your mission statement down to one succinct sentence, 3 words, you know this company is serious about what they do. Today's chat, we talk about Norman's incredible history as an entrepreneur. This is one of those stories, non-fiction, that reads like fiction. There's a movie and a book in Norman, and it's a chat that could have been 10 hours. We talk about his first early career as an entrepreneur, because I feel like he's had about 10. He started a company when he was still in his teens. He's had multiple huge exits. We talk about how he was an hour away from a $1 billion exit, and he reveals how that actually happens. It's fascinating stuff. We also talk very personal about his habits and routines that have changed throughout his life, how his extremely negative habits and routines have now transformed into a very strict, disciplined habit. We talk about his diets, his beliefs around keto, meditation, structure, and how he runs a global company across the globe, especially during COVID. It's a really great chat. Here we go with this week's conversation with Mr. Norman Crowley, the founder of Crowley Carbon. Norman, welcome to the pod.
Good to be here.
A fellow neighbor.
Yeah, Wicklow.
Just over the mountain. We're just chatting about it there. If the world is right, we'd be sitting in your lovely office doing this. So where are you based?
Yeah. Well, currently I'm based at home, but normally we're based in Paris Courthouse in Enniskerry. That's kind of global HQ. Yeah. But tragically, we haven't been there since Paddy's weekend last year. And it's quite surreal to walk into an office with 200 empty desks, you know.
So, wow, 200 empty desks. Yeah. How did you end up in Paris Court? Because that's quite an unusual location. It's like a Bond villain lair HQ over there.
Yeah, it was a kind of meeting of minds, really. Sarah, who runs the estate and is part of the Schlesinger family, she is very aligned on global warming. And we used to talk quite a lot about it. And then she happened to mention that there was space there. And we couldn't believe it, actually, that there was space there. And since then, we've been slowly annexing the whole building. So we used to have just a piece of the top floor, and now we have two floors, and we have Cool Planet Experience, and now we have the car factory. So we've kind of slowly been infiltrating the whole place.
I think this is going to be big news to a lot of people, because you've slowly, stealthily crept in there. I remember when I was reading about it, I was like, Paris Courthouse, a car factory.
Yeah, and the car factory is beautiful. It's stunningly beautiful. It's the phase one of the car factory is the what we call Ava Studio, is the old carriage house. So it's kind of steeped in history. It's where they used to have the Rolls Royces and the carriages before that, and it hasn't been used properly as a building in quite a long time. And a lot of the buildings there that we have now, Cool Planet Experiences, old bakery and laundry. So we kind of slowly do them up with Sarah, and they're beautiful buildings, completely beautiful buildings.
There's something, there's a lovely symmetry in that. There's lovely kind of circleness in that.
Yeah. There's a lot of symmetry in what we do.
It's beautiful to see older buildings being utilized here in Ireland, because I think it's something, either we didn't have a huge stock of it to begin with, but more often than not, it's a giant factory on the edge of town, and people drive by it, and it becomes just they don't even see it. So to do something, especially what you're doing, so just explain what Ava Studio is.
Ava Studio is part of, it's the latest new business in our group. So our group is called Cool Planet Group, And it spans across energy, transport, education, and will spread more into food as well in the next short while. And the reason it exists is to tackle all the different areas of climate change. So the biggest three problems in climate change are energy, transport, food, in that pretty much that order. And so we have businesses in each of those areas, basically. So energy is our energy efficiency business and our software, Energy Clarity. And they've become quite big businesses operating in 23 countries around the world. And then Ava Studio is our latest, which is electric cars. And so it's the first electric car company in Ireland, but is much, much more than that. It's probably one of the hottest EV startups in the world at the moment. And we do a couple of things in that. We retrofit existing vehicles with electric through our ECC business in Wales. And then we're also building, in PowerScore, we're building hypercars, or what we call hyper classics, which are very fast and very powerful electric cars that are very expensive. And they're the first ones to be manufactured in PowerScore.
And what are they? What are they? Are they a brand new make? Are you refitting old ones? What do they look like?
Well, the electric classic cars business, ECC, refits old ones. So we take everything from Land Rover Defenders to Fiat 500s and we convert them to electric. And they're very beautiful. And we have a cheap range, which the retrofit costs about 20,000-30,000. And then a mid-price range that we call Super Classics. And Super Classics cost between 300,000 and 800,000, and they're wow. retrofitted. So that would be anything from a Ferrari to a Jaguar E-Type. And they're fitted out beautifully. Like, these are beautiful, beautiful cars. And then Hyper Classic is at the very top end, prices 1.2 million to 2 million. And those cars are designed by two very famous designers, probably the two most famous car designers alive in the world. So Peter Brock, who designed the Corvette Stingray, and Ian Callan, who's designed pretty much every Aston Martin and Jaguar for the last, 25 years. And so they have both come together with our engineers and designed what's called Ava. And in another couple of weeks, we'll unveil the first Ava, actually, which is a very, very beautiful car. So they look like classic cars, but actually they're brand new from the ground up.
Wow.
And they're electric. Yeah.
Oh, you're capturing something very special there. Even just telling me that story, I was kind of getting lost in the moment there. I had to come back into the room.
And also, from a kind of coolness factor point of view, we build electric cars for celebrities. And so we've done Ellie Goulding's wedding car. We did Dev Patel, Slumdog Millionaire Dev. And we did a Fiat 500 for him. And we're just finishing a Ferrari we're not allowed to say who it is, but it's a tier one actress from the US. And so, because these cars are stunningly beautiful, they're very reliable, they're very quick. And so it sends out all the right messages. Classic cars are very beautiful things, but they're also very temperamental. And so if you can inject speed and reliability into a car and also not have to worry about its carbon credentials anymore, then that's a big thing.
Where did this idea come from? Because it's quite a unique spin on something that's becoming very popular.
It came from, I was always saying when I was building up the businesses that when I got money that I would have a car collection, because I've always loved cars. And then by the time I had enough money to have a car collection, I didn't want to be driving around in a big gas guzzler. It just didn't sit well with me. And so I was kind of saying, if only these beautiful cars, were electric and eco, wouldn't that be amazing? And so that's where the idea came from. And where it's leading to now, it's like every startup we've done, where you begin isn't necessarily where you end. What we've learned is that around the world, there are millions of what are called specialist vehicles. And that could be something like a mining support vehicle or an airport support vehicle or a fire engine. And these are complicated machines, right? And so you don't necessarily want to dump it just because you want an electric one. And so there's a monster opportunity to retrofit those vehicles as electric. And even something as simple as, you know, there were a lot of Bentleys sold in the 2000s that it turns out make great limousines for limo drivers. But the problem is they only do 8 miles to the gallon, and they cost $2,500 a year on road tax. But actually, they're beautiful vehicles. They're beautiful interiors, and they're smashing to drive. So the latest thing that we're doing is converting those vehicles into electric limos. And that means you can get another 30, 40 years out of them. They're way cheaper to run. They're way more reliable. And so the opportunity around retrofitting specialist vehicles is ridiculous. It's very large.
It's one of those so obvious problems that when you say it out loud, you're like, of course. But after that, I was like, yeah, it's kind of an unusual idea.
But whenever you do a startup, people laugh at it first and knock it. Sadly, about 80% of people laugh at you every time you do one of these startups. And so the challenge is to just have the confidence or fake the confidence to be able to, to be able to get past that negativity, basically. Gandhi famously said about change, he said, first they mock you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And that's so true. Like, so when we come up with a new idea, people mainly laugh, you know, and the same when you watched Elon Musk, with Tesla, not only did people laugh, but they tried everything to stop him, you know, and it's the same kind of thing. They mocked him and all that. And now he's the richest person in the world.
Yeah, I had to laugh. I had a thought like that literally an hour ago when I saw him pump $1.5 billion into crypto. And I was like, maybe people will now start to go, maybe there is something in it. For so long, people are like, oh, never take off. Oh, tulip selling, that's all it is. And now suddenly the signal gets strong enough that people are like, no, maybe that is a good idea. Yeah. Stick on this for 1 second, because you said something very interesting there about getting over that initial fear and that kind of like that anxiousness of what people will think when you start. You've started, as you told me before, literally multiple companies and continue to do so. How do you get past that, Norman? Because I think that's one thing that stops so many people.
Well, yeah, it goes deeper than, if you want to go very deep on the subject, it goes to who you see yourself as. The hardest thing for us all to do as humans is to believe that we are enough, right? And that if we have an idea, it's worth pursuing, right? So you have to listen to everybody and get their feedback. But at the same time, you have to not listen to everybody. Yeah. Because if you listen to everybody, you'd never do anything. And people call it simply self-confidence. But actually, if you do things like meditation a bit, you start to figure out that, or you start to develop, I guess, an understanding of who you are and an acceptance of who you are. And we call it kind of enoughness, you know, that if you knew you were enough, then how would you act differently than how you're acting now? And it takes a long time to develop that. But if you can develop that, then a lot of the self-doubt and self-talk that goes on reduces, you know, and you can just get on with it. And at this point, we've developed a kind of set of guidelines that we use for making sure that the noise and the doubt that happens every day, that the volume of that is turned down. Like, you still need that kind of thing, because, you know, if you didn't have self-doubt, you would think that you could fly and walk off the edge of a cliff and kill yourself, you know. So you do need, we all need to know and to take feedback from the world and from other people. But the amount of self-doubt and self-negative talk that we all have is quite a lot, actually. And so what we've learned over the years is that if you can combine meditation with kind of clever diets like keto, with fasting, with exercise, then you can turn down the volume on that and you can increase the belief that things are possible. And that's, I guess, what we've managed to do over time. And it's got nothing to do with what a lot of people say is, oh, it's easy for you, Crowley. you've made money, so therefore you don't, yeah. you know, it's easy for you to be confident. But actually, even when we made quite a lot of money, we were riddled with self-doubt, you know. So actually the two are entirely separate.
It's interesting.
One is a program that you get on that costs nothing, right? So you don't need any money to meditate. You don't need any money to eat properly. And you don't, right? And even, you know, people say, well, if I'm on the bread line, then I can only afford sugary stuff or whatever. That's horseshit, frankly. Like, so you don't need money for that. So you can get on, you know, you don't need any money to walk or run, you know. And so you can do the things that you need to do to construct a better life, basically. And sadly for me, I kind of resisted that for a lot of years. And it's only in the last couple of years that I've kind of figured out the guide rails that you need to stick to. And, you know, people like Jocko Willink, if you follow him, kind of ex-Navy SEAL, they talk about this, you know, discipline is freedom. And it's so true, you know. But it's a contradiction at the same time.
I'm a massive fan of Jocko. I really enjoy his content. What do you do? Because this is something, this is a rabbit hole I definitely want to go down with you. What is your daily
routine?
Get up
in the morning at around 7-ish. So not Jocko, 4 o'clock in the morning. In fact, that gives me a pain in the ass.
The photo every day, it's a bit much.
Yeah. In fact, I stopped following him because it was just fucking annoying.
Stop shaming me.
Yeah, and also I kind of like to still be awake at about 10 o'clock in the evening. But yeah, so up at 7, onto the bike, and then the bike, either physical bike or Peloton, kind of 30 minutes of that, weights for 15 minutes, and then off to work, basically. And so, and then work, and then intermittent fasting. And so if you don't know what that is, Google it. Intermittent fasting up at lunchtime, and then keto diet kind of 6 days a week, basically. So, and that's another thing that's really improved my mental health is keto. There's definitely, and they're only just discovering it, a direct relationship between your gut and how your mind thinks. And I've noticed a huge difference on that. And not to mention, it kind of reduces your body fat. And as you get older as well, it reduces the amount of fat around your critical organs, which is really important. So keto diet, and then finish work at 7, grab some dinner, and then meditation for an hour. So literally sit in a room for an hour with no sound, no distraction. And then commune with the fam after that. Yeah.
And, squeeze it in.
That's great. Yeah. And that's just my wife and I, because the kids are gone, and they're off in college. And so yeah, it's watching TV and all of that. And, you know, obviously pre-COVID, post-COVID, it'll involve a certain amount of travel, although we're definitely not going to travel as much as our travel schedule before this was just insane, and we're never going to go back to that. Yeah.
Interesting.
That was just dumb.
is that a permanent change for you? Has COVID going to make that a permanent change?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no going back to, the way we were before. We were doing a week of working in the office here, a week of European travel, and then a week of long haul. I've been doing that for nearly 20 years.
My God.
So never again.
That's a serious impact on the body, never mind the mind.
Yeah, it's very tough on the system. Yeah. Not to mention our €250,000 a month travel bill. Yeah.
that's considerable. Yeah. And what was that involving, Norman? What were you doing? Where were you going?
Well, we have businesses in everywhere from Sao Paulo to Sydney. So you have to see these people, you know, and you have to do deals locally. And a lot of those people are our friends. Most of them are our friends. And so you have to see them, you know. And I guess what Zoom has shown us is that, and Zoom and equivalent products, is that you can do everything over Zoom, really, you know. It's nice every now and then to go to see the people. And when the lockdown lifted during the summer, we went across and met a lot of clients, but it's not essential, you know. And you can do most of this stuff. We've done some incredibly large deals over Zoom, and we bought 3 businesses over Zoom.
Wow.
So
I'm fascinated to hear someone of your stature say that, because I was just, I do a quick pod every Monday, just a 10-minute pod with ideas and just thoughts. And one of them was that we're now hit the giant reset button. This is one of the most unique times in the world, in global history, and that's just going to be an absolute blank slate here. So I'm interested to hear you echo that as well. You think changes happening now will be carried through?
Yeah, not everything, obviously. And like, it's funny, you know, with all the sophistication in the world, that all we want to do is go to the pub and meet our mates for a pint. You
know? we're basic animals at the end of the day.
We are, really are. And that's not just blokes, I know. That's like my kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's everybody just wants, you know, the same thing. It's so laughable considering, and I would have mates like with private jets, like, and I would have other mates with, you know, the dry forklifts in warehouses, and everybody just wants the same thing.
It's funny, isn't it?
The great leveler, you know.
You talked earlier about stripping things back to the barest thing, and that's essentially what we're missing is that interaction. My God, I get excited on a Thursday when I go to Aldi. That's like, specials are out.
I went to Woody's on Saturday, and Woody's, if you're listening, get your e-commerce in order.
I saw you go in on them on Twitter this morning.
Yeah. Christ, like, wake up. And I know some of the people that work in the group, and I'm just shocked. At, you know, I know we all have bits of our business that aren't right, but lads, you've had enough time. But I hadn't been really properly out in a while, and I was in Woody's, like, just looking around, like, this is amazing. I'm out.
I can pick things up off the shelf. I can take them up to the man and pay for them.
Yeah. And bring them out to the car. It's fun.
It's so strange. Yeah.
But we do a thing on Friday. We do Zoom pints, and it's a kind of carefully curated 90 minutes every Friday with a bunch of people. And that's, you know, that solves a lot of the problem about going out to the pub. Is it as good as going out to the pub? Yes and no, actually. Yes, because we're able to do Zoom pints with people from Amsterdam and Thailand who we haven't seen for years. So that bit's brilliant, right? You just wouldn't see them that much other than this. But then obviously it's nice to be out and about, and, you know, it would be nice to be standing outside of Kyo's with a pint of Guinness in your hand, just watching the world go by.
People are salivating listening to this. Bring me back, Norman, because you talked about a lot of the companies you have started. Bring me back to the very start. Where did this whole journey begin for you?
Yeah, I kind of grew up in the 70s in West Cork on a farm. And I guess that's where the entrepreneurial bug came from. My dad was a farmer. He was a great engineer. He was a great business guy, actually. And then the other part was just growing up with not a whole lot of money, because Ireland at the time was a pretty poor place. And we would watch, you know, Dallas and all these crappy soap operas, and they all had convertible Mercedes and drank a lot and slept with everybody they could find. And a lot of that was inspiring, not the sleeping with everyone you could find. I just always wanted to get out of that. As well, Ireland at the time was a holy Catholic Ireland, so it wasn't a very liberal worldview, and I would be quite liberal in my views. And I guess that was a reaction to that, that kind of closed in, don't tell the neighbours anything type attitude, yeah. You know. And so I got a real hankering earlier on for a kind of life less ordinary. And some of that, as well, it's not entirely positive, because an ordinary life is what we should all strive for, and a happy life. And the entrepreneurial road is not an entirely happy road, you know. And a lot of the thing that drives entrepreneurs is not a healthy thing, right? It's, you know, you're driven to prove other people wrong, really, is probably what's driving quite a lot of it. And that's not an entirely healthy way of getting on. And so I set up my first business when I was 15, which was a welding business. My dad taught me how to weld. And so I used to just repair stuff for local farmers and build sheds and all of that. And that business built up. And then I sold that when I was 20 to a local builder. And then I always loved tech. So I was always programming and writing code in my bedroom with my brothers. And so I set up a tech business, and that became quite a big business, 180 people, five countries. Sold that when I was 28 and retired for about an hour.
Stick on that point for a second, right? Before you were selling that business, what was the plan? Was the plan to retire, to sit on the beach and drink cocktails?
Yeah, it's the power of intention, actually. And people talk a lot about intention, but all during my 20s, when I had no right to say this, I would say to anyone who'd listen that I was going to retire before I was 30. Wow. And at the time, I had no right to say that, and I retired before I was 30, albeit for 5 minutes.
What drove that retire before 30? What was driving that?
Oh, what drives? It's the same thing that drives everybody when you talk about money. It's like if you say to a person, well, what does Nirvana look like? They say, win the lotto, go to a beach. Right. It is that simple. But actually what you learn is that it's not that simple, that actually when you get to the beach, you're not that happy. And I know a lot of really unhappy rich people. So you have to figure out what it is that you really want and what life is about. And if I had looked back at my dad, I would have figured out what life was about, which was my dad passed away 2 months before his 90th birthday, and he was working until 2 days beforehand. And so...
There's definitely something in that. I think the sense of purpose, the sense of having a mission, I think there's an immense power in that.
Oh, completely, yeah. It's how us humans are built, right? And so once I discovered that it was really about the work and not about the money, then went back to work, set up Inspire Gaming, which is a gaming software technology business, built that. So you learn, in my case, I learn slowly, but I do learn. So that business became a monster, from 2000 to 2006, we went from 0 to 2,500 people. 300 million in revenue, floated on the London Stock Exchange in 06. And that business became a big player in the gaming space. And then famously, in 2007, one of our shareholders, a hedge fund, decided to do a takeover of the business for $1 billion. We almost sold it for $1 billion, didn't quite. because we got caught in the chop of the global financial crisis. And I guess what made that dramatic was we were 2 hours away from selling it for $1 billion when the deal fell through.
2 hours. How does that happen?
It happens because the financial crisis was getting worse and worse. But as it was getting worse, we were able to fill the holes in the transaction. So the guys who originally bid for it discovered it didn't have the money, but we were able to get somebody else to bid for it, and it just dragged on. And eventually the GFC, the financial crisis, got so bad that it just ran out of, we just couldn't do it in the end. And ironically, it was the best thing that ever happened, because I think I would have become a really arrogant, annoying twat if I sold it for $1 billion.
Would have been a nice problem to have, Don Norman. Would have been good to find that out the hard way.
it would have been, maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't, you know.
So what happened then? Can you bring me back to that moment, that 2 hour moment, that 2 hour window? What was your initial?
It's not even 2 hours. It's one phone call, right? So we're sitting there in London in our headquarters. There's a BMW 7 Series outside their door, idling, waiting to take us to Linklaters to sign on the dotted line.
Wow.
When you sign on the dotted line, we've sold for $1 billion. And you get a phone call from the Icelandic hedge fund going, it's over.
The Icelandic, they're up into everything in that in 2007, those lads. Everything.
Yeah, yeah. They were mad bastards.
They're worse than the Irish.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, it turns out the Irish are actually pretty good. And we put ourselves down, but actually, we're becoming better and better. We're becoming really dangerous, actually, in a good way.
Like that.
As Irish people. But because we're the combination of very good business skills and great crack.
And the killer combo.
And we can tell a story as well, which is really important. So yeah, so then awful 12 months after that, smoking ban came in the UK, killed our gaming business because smoking and gambling, turns out, are closely allied to each other. And then we just had to grind it out for 6-7 months and eventually ground it out, got the share price back up. And then I started suffering a lot from stress and anxiety because my lifestyle was just crap. I would get up on a Monday morning in Dublin, fly to London, leave the kids, leave the family, and then work while I was over there. Every third week, fly to Hong Kong, jump in a private jet, go to 8 different countries to see casinos we had there, and then every 12th week, fly on to Australia. And that was the life. And I was like 18 and a half stone. And we saved business, and then my physical world fell apart. Suffered a lot from anxiety, had to figure out how to fix that. And then just when we got everything under control, I woke up one morning and went, I'm sick of this shit. So sold the business to my business partner for $500 million. And that was that.
When you were going through that time, because I think a lot of people like yourself look back now and go, oh, you know, now I've started my diet and I've started my exercise and I've started that. Did you know at that time what you were doing to yourself? Or did you feel there was some higher power just pushing you forward that you had to go?
No, we had no idea. We were like an unguided missile, basically, just moving forward. And even now, I'm not convinced I believe in a higher power. I'm certainly not religious, but I'm starting to believe that we are connected actually as people, and that connection is important. But no, at the time it was just chaos and trying to live from one day to the other and get through. And anxiety, as a lot of people know, is just very debilitating, and it destroys people, as do a lot of mental health issues. But you learn massive empathy for people during that time. And since then, a lot of people I know have gone through very severe mental health problems, especially during COVID. And having the tools to get through it, and having got through it, it allows you to be very helpful, I guess, and empathic to people, you know. And yeah, and I joke that it was the best thing that ever happened, but it was the best thing that ever happened, because you learn a lot about yourself, and you learn a lot about the tools that you need to do this thing that we do, you know.
Was there a single moment, or was it just this gradual building inside you that made you just go, stop?
I think it was a building up. I think it was just more and more sick of doing the same thing every day in the same business for 10 years. It just became too much and started to feel a bit pointless too, you know, like, fine, we're going to make more money tomorrow than we did today, but it's just the same. And so, and that's why when we set up Cool Planet Group, that it had a mission and a purpose from day one. So most existential problem in the world is climate change. And so it was a big goal for us, and an important goal. And so, you know, that's where that came from. We just didn't want to do yet another business that didn't have a whole lot of meaning.
When you left the gaming group, what did you do to recalibrate? Because you talk about it being the best thing that happened to you. How did you find your way to that place?
Well, laughably, and this is a terrible idea, every time we sell a business, we pretty much start the other one within a couple of days.
Wow.
If we haven't already got it started. So the answer is I went back to work. But the learning and the calibration and all that stuff kind of stuff happens gradually over time. Like, that was 2008. And it takes a while. It certainly took 5 years after that to get any kind of sense of normality in terms of happiness and purpose and all of that kind of thing. Because things like meditation are slow burners. Things like exercise are slow burns. Right? It's why, you know, we all wish we could just take a pill to lose weight or take a pill to be happy, because it would just be instant. if it actually existed. whereas things like meditation take a long time to figure out, you know. And that's where discipline comes in. And I would never have said I'm the most disciplined person in the world, but I'm certainly learning that discipline's important, you know.
I think showing up every day is just half the battle in 90% of things we do, whether it's exercise or meditation or building a business. I think just showing up, just being there every day and just doing it. Right. Even the days you don't want to.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Look, so many days, you know, that you just don't want to be there, you know. I have to say, I have noticed with the killer combo of keto, exercise, meditation, that every day, like, you don't have bad days anymore, you know.
Interesting.
And I've noticed that with probably the last 6 months. It's like every day is a good day, you know. And even when there's shit to be sorted, it's there in front of you. The answer is clear. Just do it. Get over it, you know. So, but it's taken a while to get to that point. And you know, I was listening to podcasts and reading books from Tim Ferriss and fucking 10 years ago that had this answer in it if you chose to listen.
I've talked about this a lot on the podcast. The right book at the wrong time is still the wrong book. The right book at the right time changes your life.
Yeah, completely. And with podcasting now and Twitter and stuff, you know, that information is there on a constant basis, really. I'm fascinated with long form content now. Like, it's really weird what's happening in the world of media. And we've just set up business in this area, actually, where people are sick of snippets now and clickbait and all of that. And they want to understand what's really going on behind a story and behind a person. And the rise and rise of that type of content is really interesting to us. And what we've started to do in our group now is build our own media capability. So we have our own videographer, we have our own social media guys, everybody who works in content creation. And I think you're going to see that more and more. I think corporations are just going to go, like, look, we are now a media company. And that started with Red Bull. Red Bull did Red Bull Media House, and they were the first ones to do that. And some of the people we have in our media team are ex-Red Bull, and it's interesting chatting to them about it. You know? But there's so many things changing with this lockdown. Like, that's one of them, the death of traditional media, which is shocking. And I'm not happy about that.
But it's been coming a long time though, Norman, to be fair.
It has been coming a long time.
It's been coming an awful long time. And I remember thinking this back 2008, 9, 10, you know, they still haven't figured it out. You know what I mean? So, and I only said this last week. So it's weird that the similarities only said this last week, that companies will just layer media on top. Traditional media as we know it now will get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Absolutely.
As companies realize the power of telling your story. Yeah. I literally said this to a friend of mine the other day, who's starting a new company. I was like, if you don't tell your story, someone else is going to tell it for you eventually in the media. Absolutely. And is it going to be the right story? Is it going to be the wrong story?
Yeah.
What's
going and by to be? The way, if you can't tell your story, you're fucked. Or if you don't have a story, you're fucked. Right.
Yes.
And that's like, and that doesn't matter what business you're in. But like, if you take what we've been doing around Ava, we've been telling the story of Ava in social media for the last couple of weeks. And like last week, we had a 25,000 person increase in followers. Like,
wow.
So last week alone, 25,000 extra people started following us.
That is phenomenal.
It's crazy. Like, crazy. You know, and it's because, and this isn't me, it's our team in that area who are very talented. But like they don't think about like big bang corporate. They just start with a simple story. Like, why is this the way it is? Why are you doing it? Right. And start from there.
That's the core of everything. People ask me why I'm doing the podcast and they're like, oh, you're making money now. Is this your full-time gig? I'm like, what? Do you listen to any podcasts? Of course not.
But
storytelling is at the heart of everything. And I talk to so many entrepreneurs, and so many of them who are successful, inverted commas, couldn't tell you their story. And you're dragging it out of them.
Yeah. We buy businesses kind of all the time. And I had a call a couple of weeks ago to buy a business, and we like to look at it. And I just never, like, the CEO couldn't tell a story for shit. And we lost interest 25 minutes in. We were just like, how does this person get clients? You know, and like, it's just a weird one, you know.
So what
after you left the gaming company, what you started one immediately. Is that where you've led to today? Is it part of the Copenhagen group?
Yeah. So Crowley Carbon was what we set up then, and Crowley Carbon is part of the Cool Planet Group. And so it was just Crowley Carbon was the beginning of, it's an energy efficiency company. It's probably one of the most successful in the world. That morphed into a software company called Clarity, because we needed software to drive the energy business. And then everything we've done has morphed from that. We felt the foundation that we have, Cool Planet Experience, we felt that the climate story was just fucked up, that everybody who, you were either an eco warrior and you wanted to live in a hovel in the ground with no heating, or you didn't give a shit. But actually the vast majority of people were in the middle, and they just wanted to help climate change, but they didn't want to sacrifice their lives in the process. And we felt that person, which is 99% of the world, wasn't being spoken to. And so we set up Cool Planet Experience. And like a lot of things we do, we didn't have a clue. We didn't have a clue how to do a charity. We didn't have a clue how to do a visitor attraction. And again, we developed an amazing team led by Vicky Brown. And she figured it all out, right? And Richard Branson came on board as a supporter of that. And that led to a whole lot of other stuff. So then we now have cars, we have our education division, and soon we'll have a food division.
How do you straddle so many industries so successfully? Because you've as we've gone through the interview there, you've mentioned gaming, software, energy, cars, very disparate groups. How have you straddled them?
Curiosity, we're curious about how shit works, and so then we research it quite a lot. And then if there's an opportunity there, we get stuck into it. And if I had the time, I'd do another 10 businesses. A friend of mine, Colm, that works with us, we jokingly say, like, we don't sleep around, but we don't tell our wives about all the companies we're starting up.
That's your vice.
It's our version of cheating.
Keep her off CRO.ie. She's like, oh, he's done it again.
Yeah. Although I think my wife's getting used to it now.
What's the first thing you do when you have an idea? Because I think I get messages of people going, oh, I've got an idea, but I can't.
Well, normally we try to kill it because we really do have too much stuff going on most of the time. And then if we can't kill the idea, then we look at the market and we look at it through the lens of, if we solve that problem, will it positively impact a billion people? Because we have to have a bar now to say, there's no point in just starting something half-baked. There's no point in opening a chain of sweet shops because it's not going to impact a billion people unless you open a lot of sweet shops. And probably, as much as I love sweet shops, probably wouldn't impact people that positively. So that's the first lens. And then we look at the market. And then stupidly, a lot of the time, we just dive in. Because you learn quite a lot of stuff by just diving in. And over the years, as we've gotten a little bit bigger, the diving in looks a bit different. So now, before, we would just do what Elon did when he was doing the Boring Company, which is just dig a hole in the ground and see what happens.
How far can we get by Sunday? Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that story. But it's true, of course. But now we tend to acquire businesses in the space and stuff, so we go at it a little bit more strategically. Yeah.
Do you think you need a bit of a distortion gap, a reality gap when you're?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. It's not even a reality gap. It's what Steve Jobs said, a reality distortion field. It's not, though. It's just you have to believe before the reality says you should believe.
How do you?
And that's the scale of the entrepreneur, I guess, over time to do that.
Does it get easier?
You have to lie to yourself, basically.
Yeah. Does it get easier? Because I think when we're starting off as kind of smaller scale entrepreneurs, it's quite difficult. Does it get easier?
It gets easier if you're disciplined. It doesn't get easier if you don't follow those guide rails we talked about. Then it doesn't get easier. Because you're riddled with insecurities. And there are billionaires that we know that are riddled with insecurities. Like, I had a conversation with a billionaire last week, and he was the most insecure fucker I've ever talked to in my life. Wow. So I'd rather be poor and not riddled with insecurities, you know.
What are your guardrails? I want to talk, we have to wrap up in a minute because I know you're jumping on another call. What are your guardrails? You talked about them there, and we've kind of hinted at them in terms of your daily routine. You're an extremely busy guy. How do you use those guardrails, and what does your day and week look like?
It looks like back-to-back Zoom calls because we're just working on so many projects, and it's all with our team and sometimes with our clients, but mainly with my job is with our internal teams. And my role is to keep the vision, because the teams are so talented, my role, they know what to do, right? So my role is just to hold fast to the vision that we have. And the guide rails from a physical point of view, we've covered meditation, diet, exercise. You know, it sounds simple, almost impossible to do. And then the guide rails in business are, I've equated it before, and apologies, this has been told in other podcasts, but it holds very true, and it's been told in the media. But I used to teach people how to walk on hot coals, and it's something I learned when I was younger. And it helps you overcome fear, and we all have fear. And the three rules of firewalking are the three guide rails for us, which is, number one, fill your mind with happy thoughts, right? Because if you're there and there's a bed of 30 feet of burning hot coals, no point in saying, I'm completely fucked and I'm going to burn, right? That self-talk isn't going to cut it, right? So how do you have positive self-talk? And that's meditation, exercise, diet, right? And also, you know, who are you listening to? Who are you tuning into? Mm. You know, the Daily Mail ain't going to cut it. Right? and you know, if that aunt of yours is overly negative, just stop hanging around with her. And that sounds harsh, right?
Yeah.
It's not fucking harsh, right? If she's negative, that's her problem, right? Try and make her more positive. And if that doesn't work, choose not to spend that time with her, you know, because that's what self-love and self-respect is all about, right? And so that's the first thing. Second thing is, if you're going to walk on hot coals, you got to be clear about the destination, right? No point in going halfway across and then changing your mind. And so what we do now is we do what's called writing the book, which is before we start anything new, we write down everything that we want to achieve into a book, normally about 10 or 12 pages with some pictures. And then this is the thing that nobody does that we know is we share the book. We basically tell everyone about the book. And that's that bit. The reason people don't do that is because when you share the book, people just laugh at you and mock you and say that's never going to work. But the people that don't laugh at you and mock you are the people that are going to work with you on it. And so having the courage to communicate what it is that you want to get done is completely critical.
I absolutely love that.
And then the final one is keep fucking walking, right? If you're walking off coals, don't stop. And that again is, you know, don't stop, but also work very hard. If you want to win, you have to work very hard. And work, like I say, we do 12 hours of Zoom calls, but actually pretty much every minute we're awake, we're thinking about either the mission in some way or the business or somebody in the business or whatever. You know? And it is about work, right? And I haven't met anybody successful. I've met people who got lucky and sold out once and didn't work that hard, but I've never met anybody. That's not success. So yeah. Success is doing this all the time, all your life, and enjoying it. And that, you got to keep working at that.
I love that. I think that's unbelievable advice, especially now in COVID, because everyone's like, oh, it's a little bit hard. And I was only saying that to a friend of mine the other day. I was like, you just keep working now, because otherwise you start up again in 6-9 months, it's hard to get that wheel spinning. And you're also 9 months behind the guy who just did a little bit every day, who just kept turning up. It's incredible advice. Norman, before I let you go, where do you see the sustainability movement going? Because I was listening to a podcast last night with a builder, and he's like, oh, if I quote 20 or 30% above market price because it's a green or environmentally friendly product, you know, I'll lose the job. Do you think that that attitude is changing?
Oh, look, well, he's just wrong. Mm. He's just not thinking about it properly. Put him in touch with me. That's just a failure of imagination and a failure of marketing. right? Because actually, if you built it 30% more expensive, but it was the greenest building in Newtown Mount Kennedy, then it will sell at a 30% premium.
Yeah.
You know, that's failure of imagination. And that's a bit harsh now, and I'm sure it's a great person, but like, just think differently about it. And no, look, like, climate change will be the biggest creator of wealth in the next 10 years, more so than in the history of wealth creation. The Chamath Palihapitiya is somebody I follow on Twitter and podcasts. And Chamath says the first trillionaire will come out of climate change.
Wow.
And it will. Yeah. And if you think that's not true, you're not looking at the data. The data is very clear. Energy prices dropping dramatically because of renewables, cheapest way of generating energy, renewables, cheapest way to drive a car, electric, monster upheaval in the next while, food, plant-based, cell ag, they're the things that are happening on food. All the data is pointing in those directions. If you're betting against that, you're a fucking idiot.
Beautiful. We will wrap it there because that is the, we can't go better than that. People always look, I always ask people for the trends and stuff, and you've already nailed that as well. So listen, Norman, thank you so much. That was an absolutely incredible chat.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Where can people learn a little bit more just about yourself and about Ava?
Ava, follow us on ava.electrify on social media. Got a very cool social media presence there. Coolplanet.ie is the group website. Coolplanetgroup.ie, I think it is. And then if you Google me, you'll find loads of stuff.
Perfect. Norman, thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you too.
And that was my chat with Norman. I hope you enjoyed it. You've made it this far, so I assume that you did. As I said at the start, I'd love to see you on the newsletter. It's my way of keeping in touch with listeners of the pod because often it can be quite hard because it's a one-way conversation. And I love having two-way conversations with listeners to know who you are, where you're from, and what you're enjoying about the pod. So go to MrGaryFox.com, click subscribe, and I will drop you a newsletter next Monday with the best stuff I've seen this week. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you next Monday for the Ideal App.